Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. On this week's show, we have a jam-packed episode, so we hope you enjoy it. So sit back, relax, grab a cold beverage, and let's talk everything there is to know in Louisiana outdoors. Guys, you hear us talk about it all the time. Our buddy Jay Thomas over at Blind Grass Camouflage Systems offers hunters and outdoorsmen the most realistic, durable, and versatile camouflage materials available on the market today. Let me ask you something. Are you tired of constantly having to rebrush your blinds every year or the smell of rotting grass in your blind? How about grass that pokes and cuts you through grass mats that have no depth in color and does not last an entire season? Well, the answer to that is probably yes, you've experienced that same scenario. And Blind Grass's patented synthetic blind grass will not rot, mildew, and is 100% waterproof. And it's available in mats or bundles, and it comes in natural gas color blends or is paintable to match your unique surroundings. Folks, do yourself a favor. If you're looking to camouflage your boat blind, kayak, permanent blind, or anything else that you're looking to blend in with your surroundings, check out our friends at Blind Grass Camouflage Systems. You can visit them on the web at blindgrass.com. This episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors Podcast is also brought to you by SRD20 Boat Products. It shouldn't be hard work. SRD20 products use advanced nanotechnologies in its formulations explicitly designed for boat maintenance. From boat waxes for detailing to waterless washing wax products, SRD20 has boat care products that keep your boat protected from the elements and looking brand new. Visit them online at www.srd20.com and enter promo code LASTSTOP for 20% off all SRD20 products today. Hey everybody, welcome back to an all new episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. I'm glad to be back in the studio with all of you tuning in to this all new episode as we are now, folks, in August of 2023, getting ready for another upcoming duck season. And tonight I'm excited because I have Jackson in the studio with us tonight, and we're just going to be getting you guys caught up on kind of what's been going on over the summer with us. We've been busy. I have to admit, we have been very busy over the summer, as I'm sure many of you have. And Jackson, first of all, welcome to the show. I know last year on, you know, several episodes you came on as a regular guest with us. And now that you're getting older, man, people are familiar with you in the videos that we've done on our YouTube and social media channels. But you also started coming on the podcast last year, man. So I look forward to having you on this coming season, and you and me are going to be doing a lot of episodes together. So welcome aboard. Why don't you tell everybody hello tonight?
What's up, guys? I'm glad to be here.
Well, good, man. So like I mentioned, Jackson, man, we are now in August, and we are getting closer. We are now what? I think we're sitting at about 5 weeks away from teal season officially opening up here in Louisiana. But before we get into that, kind of talking about this upcoming duck season, I mentioned that we have been extremely busy over the summer. What's been going on? Kind of fill the listeners in on what's been going on over the summer. I know that you're an athlete, and those of you who may not know, Jackson's he's pretty heavily involved in baseball. You're a baseball player. So kind of fill everybody in on what the summer looked like for you.
Well, what summer looked like for me is that I was playing baseball, and I made a special team, like, where we had to go and, like, do a bunch of games to see if we could go, like, play for Louisiana. But unfortunately, we got to a tournament, and we didn't make it. It was really sad, but that was where it ended. And then after that, we started getting back into some more hunting and fishing stuff.
Yeah, we haven't had a chance to get as much hunting. Definitely no hunting over the summer. We don't do that. It's just too hot. But I was kind of hoping we could do a little bit more fishing this summer. But, you know, sports, when you have kids, and those of you who have kids, you know that when you have kids and you're involved in sports, that really takes up a lot of time. And, you know, it's hard to believe we just started a whole new school year
now that you are a freshman this year. It's hard to believe that in itself, that you're a freshman, man. It seems like just the other day you were in, you know, elementary and in middle school, and then here you are now, man. You're growing up right before my eyes. And, you know, when you have kids involved in sports, and it just seems like it moves, man, so quickly. You hear people say that, and it's very, very true. But, yeah, you had an opportunity this year. You were playing in the local Little League here in our area of Louisiana, and you had the opportunity. You were fortunate enough to make an all-star team with the Little League in our area, and you guys traveled. I was coaching. So that took up a lot of our time this summer. We didn't get to do as much fishing as we wanted to. But yeah, we were pretty busy with that, and we were trying to make a run to go to the World Series with this team. And to be honest with you, I thought we had the team that we could have done it with. But unfortunately, we fell a little bit short, and that took up most of the summer. And then fast forward to here we are now. We're back with another school year starting up already. Does the summer fly by to you as quickly as it does to me as a student being in school?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, whenever you're doing stuff all summer, it kind of just flies by. I mean, you're not just sitting in your house all day and it just stays still.
Yeah. Yeah, you're pretty active. So, I mean, now, you know, with you playing all the sports and, you know, now you're starting your freshman year, you're starting to hit the gym, doing a little bit of working out. And then something else that we did that many of you who listen to this podcast may not be aware of, but we started another business this summer, huh, Jackson? And that's something that we really got cranked up this year, and we've been having a lot of fun with, and that is sports card shows. We've been going to some sports card shows and some sports memorabilia shows. So that's a big passion of ours, and you know, I know that you've caught on, you know, with a little interest in it, and we've been going to some sports card shows. We actually started up a business. You know, sports has always been a big part of our lives, from when I was a kid all the way to my dad, my grandfather. I'd say probably as much as hunting and fishing was. We always were a big sports family, and you know, we followed baseball, we followed football, all the major sports, basically. And you've always liked, you know, all the sports, the major sports pretty much, even though you were a baseball player. So when you kind of saw that I had a passion and kind of rekindled that fire to start collecting sports cards again, and that we could kind of turn that into a summer job for you, something you can make a little bit of money on, I think you really kind of got interested in that, huh?
Yeah, I got interested in it just, like, based off the way, like, the cards look and how it feels to, like, just rip and open packs and then, like, make money while you're doing it, which is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you realize that you can make a little bit of income as a student especially, and that's a big business nowadays. So we had the opportunity to go to a lot of sports shows. We actually participated in a couple of sports and memorabilia shows this summer. So that kind of kept us on the road in our spare time. But had a lot of fun, man. We had a lot of fun with that. And that's just a cool fact that you guys who listen to this podcast, you probably didn't even know that about us, because that's a whole different side of what you guys see with us when we're doing, you know, all of our hunting and fishing videos. But I can tell you this, when it comes time for this time of year, we always tend to kind of migrate towards, you know, that hunting and fishing, and especially hunting season coming up. Like I mentioned, now we're in August. You know, we're almost mid part of August as we record this new episode. And like I mentioned, we're about four and a half to five weeks away from teal season. And we're kind of starting to get that buzz, huh, Jackson? We're kind of starting to get fired up a little bit. I know I am. Well, I'm sure you are too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I went in the shed the other day and started looking at all the decoys and the calls and everything, and just got fired up.
Got fired up a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you actually started kind of getting the bug a little earlier than me, because I've been so tied up. And you started putting new decoys together, stringing them up, kind of getting them ready for teal season, just in case we make a couple of teal hunts. But, you know, last year we kind of, at the end of the season, we caught some decoys on sale at some of our local sporting goods stores, and we were able to rack up last year at the end of the season.
Yeah, we just got racked up at the end of the season.
Yeah, got racked up at the end of the season on some decoys, And we were able to do that. So I know you broke into those the other day and started stringing those up and getting them ready to go, man. So it looks like you fired up. I'm fired up. I'm sure you guys listening are starting to get fired up. And if you notice, guys, if you follow us on social media, we've been getting a lot more active on social media over the last couple of weeks. It's just that time of year, man. I mean, once you get that bug, you know how it is. You get rolling, you get excited, and you start trying to pump out new content if you're a creator like we are, and start getting excited. So, you know, our last podcast that we did was back in February or early March. We had Megan and Jacob Galatas on with us from Full Plume. And if you guys hadn't had the opportunity to go back and catch that episode or haven't caught that episode yet, we invite you to do so, because that was our start of season six. We actually kicked off season six of the podcast. And it's really, I've said this before, but man, it absolutely blows my mind, Jackson, that we are now in season six of the podcast already. And you know, whenever I started the podcast years back, podcasts really wasn't this big, huge thing that had taken off yet. But I just thought it was a cool concept. And then now here we are, six seasons in, and we have talked to some phenomenal guests like Jacob and Megan and Full Plume. We've had guys like Roland Cortez, the Duckman himself, on with us numerous times. Roland's actually become a regular on the podcast. We've had guys like George Parker with Bluebird Waterfowl. He's the creator of the animator, which you guys have probably seen now. The animator has really taken off this past year. And it's awesome to see guys like George that have a product from, you know, that's starting out in the industry, in the waterfowl industry, and then just to see it kind of evolve and take off. And I could tell you, like George, for instance, you know, I knew, man, whenever he launched the animator, he was so passionate about that product. He was so excited to launch that product and get it out to waterfowl hunters. And I just knew, man, I knew whenever we sat down with George and did that episode that he was going to do something big in the industry. He was going to make some ripples, and his product was going to take off. And sure enough, it has. And, you know, another example, Jackson, Jay Thomas, our good friend now over at Blindgrass. He's another one, man, a phenomenal, phenomenal person, first and foremost, but just an excellent product. You know, you got familiar with Mr. Jay, and he's actually – You know, you're going to be, I didn't mention this, but you're going to be fishing the high school fishing team this year. You just made the high school fishing team here at our local high school, and that's something that's really taken off on the high school and collegiate levels. And a lot of these companies that we got to know through the podcast and through our social media platforms that we became friends with, these have become lifelong friends now that have also stepped up and helped support you for this upcoming fishing season. So this is a good time to kind of say thanks to those sponsors that stepped up and helped you and have product out there that is really beneficial to us as outdoorsmen.
Yeah, I just want to say I really appreciate y'all for anybody who did donate or do anything for it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you had some phenomenal companies step up. We mentioned Blindgrass, Jay Thomas. We mentioned, Mr. Blake Benoit over at Benoit Performance Baits. You guys hear us talk about Blake Benoit. We're a big fan of his baits in the summertime when we're doing fishing, whether it's sackler or bass fishing. Our friend Stuart Delcom over at SRD 20 Boat Products, man, phenomenal boat cleaning products that they stepped up. Stuart stepped up with SRD 20 to help this young group of anglers out for this upcoming high school season, and many, many more. I know I can't mention and don't have the time to mention everybody in this episode, but what a phenomenal deal, man, to have these companies that we met through waterfowl, our passion of waterfowl hunting, step up and help you guys. So I know you're very appreciative of that. You've reached out to a lot of these companies and a lot of these particular people and thanked them. And, without companies supporting and, you know, supporting the youth and people that are looking to stay and get involved in outdoors, man, we really cannot grow the sport. So I really, from the bottom of my heart, thank all of you personally as individuals and as companies. And guys, I can't tell you enough to go out and help support these great companies. Just a couple of that we mentioned tonight, because they're out there promoting and helping other people as well. And at the end of the day, that's what this community as outdoorsmen is all about, man, helping each other. So thank you so much to all of you who stepped up and continue to help people, whether it's young anglers, young hunters, or just individuals in general that are in need of help and looking to get into the sport. So thank you for that. But let me ask you this, Jackson. We now in August. What you kind of excited for, man, for the upcoming season? Because as we sit here tonight, I know we mentioned we're kind of feeling that bug. What you excited about this year?
I'm really excited about, like, well, I'm kind of, like, curious and excited, but, I mean, like, last season, like, if any of y'all saw some of our pictures, we had a great season. I think we had a great season. I'm just kind of curious if I think we're going to have another great season this year. Based on, like, stuff I've seen, like, with the water and, like, all the conditions, I feel like we might have another good season this year.
So, you mentioned the water. That's a big thing that we probably need to talk about going into the season, which we still got a lot of time. You know, before we get that big migration push, you know, hopefully we get that big migration push like we kind of had last year. But water levels this year, we are in a drought this year. It is extremely dry. And we haven't had a wet summer whatsoever. I know down here in South Louisiana, it has been quite a while since we've seen rain. And if you look at our local rivers, our local bayous, our local reservoirs, I mean, it's extremely low, Jackson. So you mentioned you think we're going to have a good migration. What kind of leads you to that conclusion of why you're thinking that?
Like, just because of, like, the water, like I said, the water levels, like, them ducks being able to, like, get all that vegetation that they don't, like, won't be able to get, like, if the water is, like, super, super high, so they could just come and eat all the vegetation that they want that might be underneath the water that they normally can't get.
Yeah. You know, with it being low like it is, we're probably going to have a lot of exposed vegetation this year, which could be a good thing. What I'm kind of concerned about is a lot of the areas that we hunt, public land. And if you're just tuning in to us for the first time, or maybe the last couple of episodes, you might have heard a little bit about where we hunt and how we hunt. We're 99% public land. Right?
Yeah.
99% public land. When we get invited on a hunt with somebody on private land, we will usually take that opportunity to do so. But 99% of where we're going to go is going to be public land. And, you know, with it being so dry, I'm just kind of worried that a lot of the areas that we access during the season, if we don't get some rain between now and November, I have a feeling that we're going to have trouble accessing a lot of the areas that we hunt personally this year. And what I mean by that is I'm not so much worried about the marshes, you know, because down in South Louisiana, we have the luxury of having saltwater marshes, but we also have some freshwater, you know, areas that we hunt as well, which particularly where we like to hunt in the second split of the season, like last year, you guys probably noticed if you follow us on social media that we hunted in the woods in a lot of the timber. And if you looked at those places that we hunted last year, and for those of you who know those areas, you're probably going to be wondering the same thing that we are. Are we going to have water to get inside those woods this year, hunt some of those ducks, and maybe get those ducks that we were able to get to last year? And let's talk a little bit about last year, because it's been a little while since we did an episode, and we haven't really got to talk, me and you, on air about it before. But let's talk about what your thoughts on last season. I know you mentioned in the beginning of the show that, you know, you felt we had a solid season. Let's kind of go back and talk a little bit about last season. What were your thoughts overall on it?
My thoughts overall on last season were that it was, like, one of the best seasons that I've ever had personally, like, hunting in the timber-wise. And, like, just the type of ducks and the amount of ducks that we had, like, over in public land, not private land, like we always say. And then, like I'll just say, like, gray ducks, wood ducks, teal. That was, like, the main kind of things that we killed. I mean, we had a couple of mallards. We didn't kill no mallards last year.
We actually didn't kill a mallard last year, not one. And they had guys that shot some. And you guys know how it is. Everybody kind of refers back to the mallard because that's the staple of the industry, it seems like.
It's the duck.
It's the duck. It's the duck that everybody kind of bases it off of, you know. And, you know, somebody mentioned that the other day. They said that we always end up referring back to the mallard. You know, you look at Ducks Unlimited's logo. You know, big corporations like Ducks Unlimited and those, you know, big corporations is always the mallard. That's the face of the companies typically in their logos. So, yeah, we always talk about mallards. But you are correct. Last year there were some mallards that finally came down to Louisiana, it seems like. But me and you personally didn't kill any mallards last year. We just didn't have any really get to work us a whole lot. We weren't in those areas, I guess, you know?
Yeah, we put the hammer on the gray ducks.
We did put it on the gray ducks in the timber, which was really nice. Well, and going back to last season, kind of just a brief recap, we really started out the first split of the season in the saltwater marshes last year, right?
Yeah, we started off in there. And it was just like a little bit too much for us, like with our setup, and then like just the amount of ducks, like it's like so much land.
Hold on, what you mean by too much for us? What you mean by that?
I mean like our motor.
Oh, like, for our motor for the boat?
Yeah, like just traveling wise.
Okay, so last year, what he means by that, guys, is we got into an area last year on some Louisiana saltwater marsh, and this particular run that we were making last year in the first split of the season, it was an 18-mile run one way.
Yeah.
Where we were running to.
With a 23-horsepower.
With a 23-horsepower surface drive, which in itself was a whole new challenge for us, or kind of didn't know what to expect, because for years, if you follow us on our social media platforms, we have been running a long-tail motor. Right, Jackson? What, 7 years? I think we were running a 35-horsepower long tail motor. We kind of knew what to expect with that. We were comfortable with that motor. That thing was a workhorse for us. We never got stuck in that thing. You could get extremely shallow with it. We never had any kind of trouble. The reason we made the switch was me. It was me, because
you don't break your arm driving that thing.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who has a long tail, you guys that have long tails, you know that, you know, it'll weigh you down, man. It'll weigh you out. And I've talked about this on other episodes that we recorded, saying kind of, you know, justifying why we were making the switch to the surface drive. And that's really all it was. It was that we were looking for something a little bit easier on me, a little bit easier on the body. Because, man, by the end of the season, or even in the second split of the season, with that long tail, hunting the timber we hunt, which is 1,000-year-old cypress swamps, you hit a lot of old cypress trees, a lot of cypress knees. And, Jackson, you could tell the listeners and the guys that hunt it know, man, you hit that with a long tail, there's no mistaking it. You know you hit it, and you feel it, every bit of it, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It'll wear you out, man. So we had the opportunity last year, being in the boat industry as my profession. We had a customer come in that traded in a little surface drive that didn't have much hours on it, and I had the opportunity to go ahead and make that purchase and do a trade in on it. And I jumped on it, man. I said, okay, we're gonna go with the surface drive for the first time in our hunting career, basically, and since you started hunting. And we're going to take that. We're going to roll with it. We're going to see if that makes a big difference on the body and just the ease of us operating in the areas that we wanted to hunt. And honestly, it was a great transition. It really was. I love the surface drive. But when you're making – I learned something. When you're making a long run, like we were making in this specific area during the first
land. Public land.
Public land. Well, there's public land and private land. When you're making an 18-mile run one way, that's, you need a bigger motor. You really do. You need a bigger motor. We realize that. Because, hey, look, the 23 horsepower, it got us there. We didn't have no problems, no issues. But an 18-mile run one way and then 18 miles back, man, that's a haul.
But we were always, like setting up whenever, like, ducks were already flying in the skies, because that's how late we were every single
time. Well, we weren't really that late. We weren't that late. No, we weren't. I mean, he's making a face, guys. Like, oh, yeah, we were. We really weren't. We just left earlier. Once we realized the run and we had the timing down, we were getting there at the right time. But, you know, by the time, and when you're in the marshes, when you're in the wide open marshes, it's different than the timber. That sun hits that horizon and it comes up a little earlier than when you're in the timber, than what we used to when we hunt second split typically. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely some adjustment going from a surface drive and making an 18-mile run one way and then 18 miles back. So that made us realize quickly that we could probably use a little bit bigger motor. But, you know, this year we're going to be running the same motor. So if we're going to hunt those areas that we hunted last year, we're going to be making that same run. We just, you know, we learned to adjust to it a little bit. But we had a good – the point of the story is, I guess, we had a really good first split in the saltwater marshes. It was good to us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of gadwall. There was gadwall early on. What else in the saltwater marshes? It was mainly gadwall we killed last year.
Gadwall, bufflehead, teal, mergansers.
We didn't shoot a merganser.
Not. I'm just saying, like, what they
what
have,
you saw,
what they have over there.
Yeah, no, we don't shoot mergansers if we get help.
And then and then model ducks over there too.
Yeah, model ducks. Yeah, which is typical. You know, you guys that hunt the marshes, you kind of know the species. But we were very happy with the birds that came down early. I would say first split in the marsh last year. I was excited. I know. I mean, I was glad to see the numbers that we had last year. So that was pretty cool. Bufflehead, that was something a little new for you. I know you. I don't think you had ever shot a bufflehead till last year, huh?
No, I tried to shoot one before last year, but I kind of missed.
You missed them?
Yeah.
Now, last year when we shot, we had to shoot a couple of bufflehead a few times. Well, didn't we kill like all hen bufflehead last year when we did shoot some?
We shot about like 30 bufflehead last year, and they were all hen.
Wait, how much?
Like 30.
No, we didn't shoot 30 bufflehead. We didn't shoot 30 bufflehead. There's no way we shot that many.
In a season?
Yeah, there's no way we shot 30 bufflehead last year. I remember one hunt specifically that that's all we had come in on us. And I think we had like 4 or 5 that hunt, something like that. But I mean, I don't remember killing any big numbers of bufflehead after that. It was pretty much predominantly gadwall for the most part down in the salt water. You know, when you say you really think we killed 30 bufflehead last year
throughout the whole season? Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you're off on that, but that's okay. We'll just agree to disagree on that one, I guess.
Because I mean, bufflehead would be like we'd have 3 bufflehead before we'd have 3 gadwall.
I remember 2 hunts where we had that one hunt I just referenced, and then we had another hunt one day. It was a little slow. We had some come in on us, but that was about it. But anyway, I mean, that was really our first time really shooting bufflehead. I would say most years when we're down in the saltwater marshes, it's pretty much going to be gadwall that we're going after. Now, what kind of caught me off guard, and I'll say this, you tell me what you think, but I was kind of surprised at the lack of teal early on last year.
Yeah, I mean, we know that there's going to be gadwall there. We know that's the main thing we're going to see if there is any ducks there. But, I mean, teal, you would think there would be some there, like, because that's mainly where like teal would go. They go timber, marsh. Like, anywhere, basically, but, like, we just didn't have big numbers of teal in the marsh last year.
Didn't have yeah, I agree. We didn't have real big numbers of teal last year.
Mainly bufflehead and gray ducks, that was it.
Yeah, yeah. For the most part, really what we're targeting down there, and for those of you who aren't from, you know, Louisiana or at least South Louisiana, we're really targeting gray ducks is what we're going after because, you know, we've referenced that before in several episodes. Gray ducks have now become the new mallard for Louisiana pretty much, you know. That's what our larger numbers of species typically are going to be, you know, especially in South Louisiana, I would say that.
So, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, hell, I'll take that. You know what blows my mind, Jackson, is you look at social media and you get guys that look at gadwall specifically, and they'll say, man, they'll call gadwall stupid. That's a stupid duck. That's us. Anybody can kill a gadwall. You know, I see that on social media. And I could tell you that that's the furthest thing from the truth, especially when they get down here. I don't know if that's just a Louisiana down south thing or if maybe, you know, those birds haven't been pressured like a lot of other species when they're in the upper portions of the flyway. But when they get down here, they're not exactly the dumbest birds, I wouldn't say. You know?
And my answer to be like, why I shoot gadwall all the time will be always to be the same answer. Well, because if – you ain't killing no ducks and a gadwall comes in, are you not going to shoot it?
I'm going to shoot it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's still a pretty duck.
And I'm going to shoot it twice sometimes.
Yeah, the big old ones in the marsh. I got on my wall.
And as we, yeah, I was going to say, as we're recording this, we're looking at the wall right here. And you got a gadwall mounted right here. You just got you a gadwall mounted this year. So tell everybody listening kind of what's the story. You remember that duck specifically?
Yeah, I remember because.
Tell the story
because,
about that.
Because you and me actually like got a two gadwall mounted, like
by
the same dude. And I remember we hunted Saturday and Sunday. We went both days to the same spot, and you shot a gadwall, and that thing was freaking humongous. And I said, "Dude, it's going on the wall." And he said, "What?" And I was like, "It's going on the wall." He said, "No way." I was like, "Yeah, it's like that big."
You paddled out to it and picked it up for me. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken.
I was looking at it and like the colors on it were pretty and all that. And then mine, I shot actually the next day, and like I was looking at it and it wasn't as big, but mine had a pretty like pinkish red color all on his like hood at the top of his head. Like I was like, oh my god, this is going on the wall. Like, and I can still see it now. Like it's just a pretty pinkish red, and like the beak was like pure black, and then like the white and black and like the kind of brownish red on his wings were all like perfect.
Yeah, what pumps me up even more of you telling the story is just how your voice. I could still feel the excitement, and that's something you're probably never gonna forget. You know. That bird right here on the wall is a bird that you are never going to forget from the time you are when you shot that bird and you harvested that bird to when you're going to be older like me with kids. As long as you look at that mount, you'll probably never forget that story. And that's the magic of what we do. That's the magic of waterfowl hunting. That's the magic of passing on those stories and those traditions down. And that's what still drives me to this day. To go after them, because you know, people ask me, they'll say, "Man, you know, y'all hunt public land." You know, they ask me that all the time, and you've heard people say that. They say, "Man, why y'all don't just get a lease? Why y'all don't just do that?" Honestly, I love the pursuit of it, man. It pumps me up. I love going after public land game in general, but we duck hunt. That's what we like to do. I don't deer hunt a lot. I don't deer hunt at all. Actually, you the deer hunter in the family.
Yeah, I mean, I deer hunt more than anybody else probably in the family.
That's right. You do. You know, your brother, he came up. He's coming up behind you. He's 9 years old this year, and he started deer hunting a little bit last year. My father-in-law is a huge deer hunter. Y'all get to deer hunt with him and my brother-in-law. But, man, that there's something about waterfowl that just drives me insane. From the time I've been a little boy to the where I'm at now at 44 years old, I still am as passionate, if not more, than I was when I was 8 years old killing that first wood duck that I shot.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think all you private land hunters, you think you're pumped up for duck season, but if you're a public land hunter, you're extremely pumped up for duck season to come.
What is it about? What in your opinion? Because you've never had the luxury of hunting private land, having a lease, nothing like that. But what is it about public land, Jackson, being a freshman in high school, being the age that you are at 14 years old, what is it that drives you and gets you fired up about public land duck hunting?
Just the people mainly. I mean, like showing up, trying to be the first one there, seeing all your buddies that you know hunts there. You always talking to them all the time. Just after the hunt, seeing how many ducks other people have, kind of bragging a little bit if you got more ducks.
Everybody kind of talking shit a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? Excuse my language.
And then just like. Just the thrill of like getting all to the spots and stuff and just talking to people about the hunt.
Yeah. I mean, it becomes a brotherhood, man. You know, not only is it a brotherhood because of us as waterfowl hunters all in general, but public land waterfowl hunters, in my opinion, just have a different type of bond. You know, wouldn't you agree with that? You know, yeah. it's a different feeling like you kind of talking about, you know, every year, You kind of know when you show up to a certain spot. You kind of know who to expect. You always get some new guys that are coming into the sport or, you know, some guys that you may know that bring a friend, which is awesome in my opinion. It's exposing other people to the sport. But you kind of see each other. You may not talk to a guy for a year.
Yeah.
And then – November rolls around, and like, we show up to that same boat launch.
And you're like, man, I saw that dude's truck last year. Or, oh, I saw that boat last year. I didn't talk to him.
Yeah, and you may not know them by name at first, but you kind of know what they drive. You know what boat they have.
Yeah, I mean, like, if it's your spot and you go hunt there, like, often, I mean, there's not many people that you're not going to know or eventually get to know.
That's right. And that's why I love it, man. That's what the chase for me is about. And it sounds like that's a lot of that is kind of what you feel, too, you know? Now, what if I had to – that's all the great stuff about it. What's a couple of your pet peeves about public land hunting? If you had to tell somebody right now that's getting into it, you know, what's some advice you would give a new waterfowl hunter, being a young hunter? What would you tell somebody
about public land?
Yeah, about public land hunting, because you know, say most people that are getting into the sport, they don't have the money to jump into a high dollar lease, right?
Yeah,
they don't have the funds to do that. You know, especially with the price of leases nowadays. And the economy like it is, it's tough. Money is not readily available for people to spend on a $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 lease, you know? Yeah. So most people are going to be forced to public land at that point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you, a gentleman like your age, you know, 14 years old, 15 years old, you're a freshman getting into high school, that's oftentimes I find when a lot of people start getting kind of interested in the sport, if they weren't brought up in it, but they've been with somebody, they kind of show an interest in getting into waterfowling. What's some advice that you would give as far as public land hunting goes?
Mainly, like, just for public land, really. First of all, like, respect the rules, like, of public land hunting, and, like, just respect everybody around it, like when you go hunting and stuff, but, like, be ready, like, get, like, you can't, like, talk to people, know what they're doing, understand what they're trying to do, and, like, just respect them.
Man, I can't tell you how proud I am to hear that answer as your dad. That's awesome. That's what it's all about, man. You know, you just gave the perfect answer. First of all, you're on public land. Everybody has right to that land to be able to hunt. And, you know, you always hear all the crazy stories every year about guys getting into fights and this and that. But honestly, since you've been hunting with me, since you've been tagging along, really, we never experienced a whole lot of that, right?
Yeah, and if we do, we just end up hunting with them or, like, just going to another spot and there's no problem.
That's it. No problem. There's no reason to get into a confrontation with guys. There's no reason to get into a big pissing match with somebody over that. And man, how many guys have we got to know by doing that, saying, hey, why don't you come on the hunt with us? You know, yeah, we both kind of scouted this spot out because there's only so much land. We know that. There's only so many. You know, as much public land acreage as there is in at least Louisiana, and I'm sure it's the same in a lot of other states, you know, when you look at the actual square footage of what you could hunt, literally hunt, you know, for waterfowl, it really shrinks it down. It shrinks those numbers down as far as total acreage goes. So there's no reason to get into an argument, into a big fight. We all kind of know the areas that we want to go. If you put in that scouting time on public land, trust me, and I've said this for years, there's no secret spot a lot of times. You know, if you think it's a secret spot, then you are sadly mistaken, because there's some other guy who's putting in that time scouting, and he's going out there and he's finding that same spot that you think you found, the so-called secret spot. And I promise you, you're going to end up meeting up with him at some point, you know. So it's no use to get into a big fight or an argument. And we've been very lucky over the years, you know, that we've never really had no major confrontations with nobody over that type of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and if you do, just remember one thing. Daylight's coming and the ducks are coming. You got to get ready.
You got to get ready, yeah. So you can sit there and you can bullshit and argue over it, or you can come to a quick solution, and team up and go hunt and make a good hunt together. And like I mentioned, you get a lot of guys like that. When we've done that, we've met tons of guys over the years that we've become friends with. And that's those guys that we're talking about. You show up at the launch next year, and you see each other, and you kind of nod at each other, go shake hands, give them a fist bump, and you talk about, you know, what we're talking about tonight, how the season's going to go, what they're fired up about, and tell some of those stories like you just told about that gadwall right here on the wall. You know, that's the cool part about it, in my opinion. And that's what continues to drive me, man. It gets me fired up, guys. You could tell it in my voice, probably. I could tell in Jackson, your voice, that you get fired up about it. And man, that's just what gets us fired up for this upcoming season. So I'm really, 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 really starting to get pumped up about it. Now, I will be honest with y'all. I'm probably not as pumped up for till season right now, just simply because these temperatures that we've been having, God dang, man. I mean, we said today, guys, in South Louisiana, I hopped in my truck to go to lunch from work today. You know, usually you get in your truck, your vehicle's been sitting in the sun, you turn it on, it shows that crazy temperature, high temperature. But then you start going down the road and that temperature just kind of starts dropping a little bit, you know. Well, I can tell you that today, right here in South Louisiana, I get in my truck, it's 107 degrees from my truck sitting in the sun. After 20 minutes of driving or 15 minutes of driving, it was sitting at 105 steady. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. That don't get me too fired up for till season here in about 4 or 5 weeks from now. What you think? You ready to go fight the heat like that for till season?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, hey, that's speaking like a young man. You could do that.
I don't care.
You don't care.
Bring an ice chest. Bring water, whatever. Go have fun. Go shoot ducks.
Just don't bring the old man, maybe, huh?
Yeah. Just bring me and I'll go. Well, stay in the truck.
Hey, we could drop you off. I could take a nap if I got to. No, I'm joking. You know I'm full of shit when I say that. Because I'm as mad at him when it comes time. When that season hits and it opens up, I get as mad at him as when I was your age, I promise you.
Yeah.
Full of piss and vinegar, I call it. That's what, how I get when it opens up. I say, oh, man, it's hot and I might not want to go. And then when it hits, I'm ready to roll, man. I'm ready to get going. But no, honestly, it makes it really tough. When it's 105 damn degrees outside right now in August, which August is always one of our hottest months, you know. So that's just the way it is typically when you live down in the South. But 105 degrees, that's a little bit warmer than it normally is. So, you know, I hope we get that front cool, that little just a dip in the temperatures because – honestly, Jackson, it helps. Typically, that's when we get a little push of till for till season down here, you know?
Yeah. And another thing I'm hoping for, what, obviously not till season, but, I mean, last year, like, well, obviously not right now because, I mean, it's, like, super hot and humid. But, like, last year, like, throughout the entire season, we had, like, cool weather. Like, it was, like, cold weather.
Yeah.
Not like snow. Not like below 30 degrees, but I mean, it was like steady 50s, steady 60s all throughout last season, which was like really happy. Like we would in the hunt and I'd still be wearing like warm clothes. Like normally I'd like just strip them all off and just be in my t-shirt, but it wasn't like that.
And guys, you got to be from down south to understand what he's talking about. When he says cold 50, 60 degree weather, a lot of you who probably aren't from down south, you're probably laughing and saying, man, that's hot. You know, but for us down south, all us hunters down south, when you stay in steadily in the 50s, the 60s is comfortable. I wouldn't say that's cold, but it's comfortable. But when you're in the 50s and the 40s consistently, that's a pretty cold winter for us down south for the most part. That's good hunting days a lot of times, you know. But, you know, we got even colder than that last year. You remember last year we were going into timber in the second split. And we were breaking ice. You remember that?
Uh-huh.
You remember that time when we had the ducks coming in the hole and they were landing on the ice?
Yeah, they would slide.
Yeah.
And then we throw the decoys out and the beaks of the decoys get stuck like in the ice, like right side up.
It looked like we were throwing darts at a dartboard. We'd throw the decoys out and they would flip and that weight would flip over and that beak would hit the ice and it'd stick dead into the ice.
Yeah, I never thought I'd throw a decoy out and it just like bounce and make a knock sound.
Make a knock, slide, and slide on the ice. And that's just something we're not used to down here, guys. I know y'all probably laughing at us if you up north and you're in the upper portions of the flyways, but for us down south, that's a big deal. When we get ice that we actually got to break down here, it's pretty cold. It's pretty cold down south for us at that point, you know? And that time that I was referencing, we had some birds coming in, and that's just not something we see a whole lot of times. But they circled, we called them, they locked up on the hole, they came down and hit that ice and just kind of slid. You remember that? What was it? It was some gadwall?
Wood ducks.
Wood ducks. It was some wood ducks. They came in, hit the ice, slid, kind of like stumbled a second, and then stood up.
And then they're like, wait, what?
And we should have shot them coming in, But, like, we were kind of mesmerized. They kind of came in quick. And when they hit the ice and they slid, we just kind of froze when we looked at them for a second.
Yeah, I think we got one out of that.
Well, yeah, it was a couple of them that came in. But I was more shocked. I was kind of entertained, I guess you could say, by how they hit the ice and slid and then just stood up. And they kind of looked around, shook their feathers off and looked around. Now, I think they were as surprised by the ice as we were probably.
Yeah.
You know? So that was pretty cool. But so we, you know, we did get some cold weather and some consistent cold weather, like you said. And that was really good last year. We didn't have too much rain. We didn't have no major hurricanes, which, knock on wood, so far this year, you know, we're in the heart of hurricane season right now. But so far, so good, man. And I'm really keeping my fingers crossed there that we don't have any major storms, because hurricane season typically is going to run August, September, you know, into September. And that's kind of the peak, really, is August and September. So with the temperatures as hot as it is, the Gulf of Mexico as hot as it is, the waters, man, I just pray that we don't have any kind of late season hurricanes before we head into teal season and then later on down into big duck season, coming up. So all we could do is hope and pray and leave that up to Mother Nature and the good Lord above. But, the last time we had a hurricane was a couple of years back. We had Hurricane Ida that came through Louisiana and pretty much pounded us pretty good. You know, it hit us pretty hard. But it ended up turning out to be a pretty good duck season for us that year, too, you know. It ended up moving around a lot of coastal marshes. Areas that had been, you know, blocked up with vegetation became open, freed up a lot of ponds that we hunted, if you remember that, Jackson. And we had some success that year, but it's not something that we want to see, happen very often. And unfortunately, when you live down in the South, especially on the Gulf Coast, you know, you do have to put up with that. So hopefully, like I said, keep our fingers crossed, we'll be okay. Everything will work out there. We'll make it through another year without any major disasters. So, well, let me ask you this. Last year, going back again, what was your favorite hunt? Do you have a particular hunt that we made last year that you remember that was your favorite hunt? Tell us about that.
Yes, my favorite hunt was, well, it was actually a fun story and fun hunt. So I'll just tell a story first. But so we were hunting in the marsh, like the saltwater marsh, like we were talking about earlier with the 18-mile run and all that. And we went and we didn't, well, nope, I think we killed like two maybe. I don't know. But it wasn't as much as we were hoping to kill. But then we killed two, and then we went in the truck, and on our way home, our buddies sent us a picture of a two or three man limit of gadwall that they killed in the timber, and we're like, God damn it. And we're like, bruh.
I wanted to kill you.
Yeah, because he wanted to go there.
Tell people why I wanted to kill you.
Because he wanted to go there, and I didn't want to go there, because I've never had good hunts there in the past, but he has.
That was the opening weekend of the second split.
Yeah, and then so that was.
So wait, just to clarify that so we don't confuse everybody. So opening week of the second split, I told Jackson, I said, hey, look, you want to go to the timber? Typically, in the second opening week of the second split, we tend to do, you know, pretty good in the past. We had seen some birds, scouted, you know, a couple of birds, but nothing that really impressed you. You know, and you'll be the first to admit that.
I mean, you can't blame me, though. I mean, we were killing, like, numbers of gadwall in the marsh. I mean, I just figured we'd do the same thing.
Yeah, and I was good with it. That's why I didn't buck you too much on that idea, because I was like, hey, you know, we've had a really good first split. We had 2 weeks closed for the split, and then we back at it. Why wouldn't there be, you know, plenty of birds back in the marsh? So go ahead from there. I'm sorry.
So, like, we hunted the marsh on a Saturday, and then we still had that Sunday to go hunt.
We killed five that Saturday. I remember it. Five. Yeah.
And then, like, we're like, well, I mean, I guess we'll just go, like, to the timber. I mean, that's where our camp's at. And then we stay there. So we're like, why not? I mean, we got a place to stay. We could just go stay over there. So we're going over there, and we get there. See, this is why my favorite hunt. So we get there, and we were talking to our buddies, and then we found out what everybody was going. And then we decided to go to a hole that nobody was, like, going to, and we went and, like, we just pounded them.
So, okay, so a little bit of backstory on that, what you said right there. So we show up to a WMA, which is, you know, in where our camp is located at. We show up to the WMA. And it's just like most WMAs or public land areas. Everybody kind of gets in line. You know, first guy got first shot at which hole he wants. And this particular area, this particular WMA, I'm really proud to say this, is that it's not a big fight. It's not a big rush. If the guy's there first in line in the staging area, then he's going to pick the first hole. Nobody's going to try to beat him to the hole. Nobody's going to try to run him over to get to the hole. None of that stuff. So first hole was taken. There was our friend Mr. Scott, who is an older gentleman. He's been hunting there for many, many years. He was actually, second in line?
Yeah, and he wanted to go to the hole that we hunted. But one of our other buddies convinced him otherwise.
The guy, our buddy who was first in line, had convinced him to go to a different hole, and not trying to fool him or anything like that. He just told him, he said, hey, I think you, instead of going to this hole, you should go to this other hole. And we've always done real well there for opening of the split.
Y'all have.
And he said, no, but he was, Mr. You know, he was telling this other guy who was second in line that.
Yeah.
And Mr. Scott said, well, okay, I guess I'll go ahead and I'm going to go to that hole. So here we walk up to him and we're third in line at that point, right?
Yeah.
We're third in line. And we walk up to him and we're like, hey, Scott, good morning. You know, where are you going to go? Which hole are you going to take? And he's like, well, I was going to go to, we'll just call it, whatever hole, the hole number three. I was going to go to this hole, he says, but, Austin talked me into going into this hole, told me I should probably go there. So I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to that hole.
Yeah.
So we were like, okay, perfect. We'll go to the other hole then that you were originally
going
to go to.
And the funny thing is that I wanted to go to that hole, and I got upset when he said he was going to that hole.
Yeah, y'all, we were on opposite ends right there. You wanted to go to that hole.
And so, I figured that's where we were going to get because, like, he wanted to go to the other hole.
Yeah, he wanted to go to what we'll call hole number two.
Yeah, the thicker hole.
Yeah, that's correct. So we end up going, getting the hole in a different – the third hole, basically, and – like you said, we went to pounding them that morning.
Hold on, I got this. So, like, we're just sitting there, and I'm all upset. I'm not expecting it, and I'm like, we're just sitting there, and then all of a sudden, meh, 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 like, just in the pitch black, just we already hear Grey Ducks flying over the sky. We hear, like, just circling, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Then your attitude started to change.
Yeah, and then, like, just right at shooting time, when it's still a little bit dark, I mean, like, we just hear, we hear him hit the water, and I'm like, we had the
decoy set out, making a little bit of rip on the water, and like you said, you could hear him, meh, 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 meh. And I mean, it wasn't like they were migrating, they were flying,
yeah,
you know, they were over us.
Right above the treetops, looking for a place to land.
Looking to come in the hole. They knew that hole was there, and I remember the moon, the light, you could see, it was well lit, so they could see those decoys in that hole.
Yeah, we just see shadows, like, flying above us, like little dark spots, so, like, we just can't see the colors yet, but it was gadwall and wood ducks.
Gadwall and wood ducks, which this area that we in, guys, if you follow us on social media, you've seen us in those timber hunts, it's always got a lot of wood ducks.
Yeah.
We always could bank on wood for the most
seed.
Part.
That's
yeah,
fine.
They got a lot of duck seed. It's budding woods. It's thick. It's cypress brakes. Just a cool, great, old, traditional duck hunt area, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, I told y'all about, like, what we killed in the marsh, but, I mean, like, in the timber, we'll kill gray ducks, mallards, teal, wood ducks. What else?
So, blue-winged teal, gadwall, mallards, widgeon.
We're shooting widgeon
there.
That hunt, we also heard widgeon.
We did.
In that hunt, but we didn't kill any. They just came early.
I think we shot like two widgeon last year. It wasn't much that we shot last year.
Yeah.
With a widgeon. But that area does have some. I actually have a duck on my wall mounted that I killed in that particular area years back that was killed there. Beautiful drake widgeon. So we get a wide species of birds there. And that's what's cool about it. And for those of you guys who hunt the timber, you know how fun it is to see those ducks kind of come through them trees and hit those holes where you're at.
Yeah, and also Mexican whistlers.
Yeah, that's become huge.
Yeah,
you see that everywhere.
We see those now.
They're landing in the pond right here in the neighborhood now. They're everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're just crazy. And they're like, back to the story, the reason why it was one of my favorite hunts is because, like, that we limited out that day. And, like, we don't normally limit out that much. But, I mean, like, we just did it. And then, like, it was actually funny how we got that last duck. Because, I mean, remember how I said we were kind of shooting and it was still kind of a little bit dark. But it was, like, still after shooting time. And I went and the whole hunt, I thought it was a log. And then I walked out probably about 20 yards to, like, the entrance of the hole. I picked it up, and it was a big old hen gadwall. And I was like, limit. We're done. Go home.
Well, if you remember, I said, why don't you go check it? Because I didn't want to shoot anymore because yeah. I thought we had one down. And sure enough, I remember you told me, you turned around and you said, it's a log. And I was like, you sure?
Yeah, because, like, you know how, like, normally they'll, like, kind of float away or something? But it just stayed in the same spot at the same distance.
It wasn't moving, yeah. But we're in that thick duck seat.
In the duck seat, it'll keep
They don't just drift off, which is kind of good about hunting in that thick duck seat.
The difference between the marsh and the timber, and the marsh is all windy and no duck seat.
Oh, yeah. You knock a duck down in the saltwater marshes, and that thing might be in the Gulf of Mexico in about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's how much it could blow away if you don't go get it. So.
Yeah, or in the grass. So you'll lose it in that grass in a second.
Yeah. So that hunt was your favorite hunt, was the second hunt of the second split, basically. Yeah,
and then after that, like, for the rest of the season, like, we just got hooked on that spot on the timber, and we just hunted that for the
We stayed in the timber at that point.
We stayed in. I mean, it was just the same thing. Just gadwall before dark, man. I mean, like, we didn't get limits every time, but we
killed. But we did kill some limits, yeah.
So I'm saying, like, hell of a season last year.
Hell of a season.
And I hope the gadwall stayed.
They didn't stay. They went back north, but hopefully they come back. Hopefully they got some good memory on that their track back
not
down
stayed,
south.
Stayed, but like hoping that they'll be like last year and they'll come back.
Yeah, I hope so too. You know, we talked about low water and not having a ton of water this year. One good thing about not having a ton of water is that it's going to concentrate the birds. So this year, the water we do have, unless we get a lot of rainfall now between now and basically November. I'd rather low water as long as we can access where we gotta go.
Yeah, it's not like we're not getting stuck or something.
That's right. You know, and we can at least get to where we gotta go. Because these areas that we're at, we're pretty far back in the swamp when we hunt in the woods in these particular areas, you're not just gonna walk to that. You know, you're not typically gonna walk in there with decoys and guns and all your gear that you need to get in there. It's a pretty good ways off. So you got to get access it by boat. You got to have water. But the great thing about having low water in those areas, those low water years, is that it really kind of concentrates where those birds could go to. Now, on the flip side of that, it concentrates where the hunters go also.
Yeah.
We can't spread out as much. So you really got to be on top of your game. You got to put your scouting time in. You got to get there early. You can't be rolling in late.
Yeah, the pluses of having a camp right there. I mean, you can get there earlier before some dudes who might not have a camp.
Yeah, and that's one good thing. So hopefully we have water and we have access to be able to get to it. But I think the low water is definitely going to be good for us this year if it stays like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a little bit more water, but not a bunch of water where it spreads all the birds out everywhere where they can just go wherever they got to go.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, man, I mean, I'm really glad in this episode we got to sit down, kind of reminisce a little bit about last season, kind of talk about this season coming up. And to be honest with y'all guys, just to fill y'all in kind of where we've been, what we've been doing this summer. Like I said, we've been very, very busy with a lot of stuff outside of hunting and fishing. Just life gets in the way, and we've been busy like many of you probably had. But here we are, like we talked about, we come together just like we do at the boat ramp when we meet other hunters and we talk about waterfowl hunting. It all brings us here, and this is what we love when this time of year comes around, guys. So we look forward to continuing season 6 of the podcast. Guys, like I mentioned, please don't forget to go check out our great sponsors. You hear the commercials during this episode. You see us talk about them on social media. A lot of great companies we work with because we love their products. And in turn, they support local guys just like you and me, average working guys that love this sport and have a passion for this. So we look forward to working with a lot of great companies this season again. And we look forward to this season. Just to sum that up, you know, we look forward to it. We're going to have some guests on, new guests on the show on different episodes with us. And we're going to continue to bring you guys a fun, hopefully entertaining podcast throughout the season, throughout the hunting season. And we wish you guys only the best. And thank you so much for your support of us here at Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. Well, Jackson, we now right at about an hour. You have anything in closing that you'd like to say or thank anybody in particular?
No, I think I'm good. Just get ready to hunt.
Let's get ready to hunt. Let's get ready to do it, man. Give me a fist bump. We're going to rock and roll here pretty soon.
And guys, we'll make sure to bring y'all some very good footage this year too.
Yeah, we're going to get you guys some videos. So thank y'all so much for the support on the YouTube channel, Facebook. You doing TikTok, Jackson? You doing Instagram for us? Real busy on social media. So thank you guys for the support. We appreciate you guys sharing it with your hunting buddies and your friends. But that's all we got for y'all this episode, guys. So we enjoyed the time we got to spend with everybody. And until next time, this is Jackson and Jacob Robbery with Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. We'll see y'all again and talk to you again soon.
Folks, welcome to Game Changer Boats. Don't fall for production boat quality. Many production aluminum bay boats and boats are constructed using 100 gauge in aluminum and are only welded on the outside of the hull, creating weaknesses that promote cracking. The lightness of the construction also increases the roughness of the ride of the boat. Game Changer Boats uses superior materials, thicker aluminum, and better built techniques for your boat. Rest assured knowing that we take pride in the construction of your next boat. If you're in the market for a new boat, visit Game Changer Boats at www.gamechangerboats.net or visit us on Facebook today to place your order. Guys, let's talk fishing for a minute. When you're looking for bait and tackle for all your fishing needs, look no further than Benoit's Performance Baits. Benoit's Performance Baits offer some of the best soft plastics for bass, Saccule, and saltwater species. Rather it's a day on the water or trying to catch a mess of fish for a family fish fry or a heavy bag to win a tournament, Benoit's Performance Baits has what you need and what the fish want. You can visit us on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok to place your order today with Benoit's Performance Baits. Hey guys, are you tired of going to big box retail stores looking for the perfect duck call to meet your needs? Well, if that's the case and you're tired of paying high big box prices on cheap duck calls, then check out Locked On Sound Calls. Locked On Sound Calls offers hunters customized, hand-turned, and hand-cut reed duck calls that are some of the most realistic sounding calls in the timber and open waters today for hunters. You can visit them online at LockedOnSound.com and design your favorite duck call in just about any color combination or any design possible. They offer both acrylic and wood calls and at prices that won't break the bank. You can also visit them on social media at LockedOnSound on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok to design your perfect call and have it delivered right to your door in time for hunting season. Don't forget to mention you heard about them right here on Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors.